Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
And you are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. 1890 453 106 is our local number. Our text number is 53106. That'll cost you 30 cent. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter or send us an email to afternoon@newstalk.com. Just referring back to some of the stories we were talking about with Jonathan De Burka Butler there on the Around the World slot. Someone says, Madam Secretary, the TV show had a story about the US entering talks with the Taliban. Fact, fiction and all that. Well, I suppose it was one of those situations where they were going to have to do it sooner or later, I suppose, because the Taliban aren't going to go away. Oh, Mashrib Greb, or as the commoners say, the Nile is wonderful. One of the all-time greats, says another texter who's obviously familiar with that particular song. And Alan says, why is it that when it comes to Afghanistan or North South Korea and Syria, etc., that the US in Western media is perceived as an honest power broker whose only concern is the promotion of democracy and freedom? No peace can be negotiated between countries unless the Americans get their way, and that their unipolar world interests are adhered to, says Alan. Well, the second part of your question, Alan, with respect, completely contradicts the first part of your question. I think it's the second part of your question is, I don't think the media does depict the US as an honest power broker, just as a power broker. And the reason why in so many of those parts of the world, for instance, North South Korea, because the US has got a whole heap of troops there and rockets and all sorts of things there. So as is often the case in international democracy, there's a diplomacy, there's talks, but people don't really tend to pay that much attention to what you're saying unless you've got a big rocket on your shoulder that you can aim at them. And as you know, the US gives billions every year to Israel, for instance. So that's why they're so often involved in these things. Now, President Trump wants to be far less involved in those kind of things in the future. We did mention that, Jonathan did mention that it's International Women's Day, and I think it was on in a couple of days' time. When's International Men's Day then? And it's Mother's Day on Sunday. Women are losing the run of themselves altogether, says his text. So, well, to answer your question, Monday the 19th of November is International Men's Day. Then you can celebrate the fact that men are still paid more than women, that men all over the world have been sexually assaulting and raping women at will, and that's only now coming to light. You can celebrate the fact that in terms of business or politics, that men still predominantly have all the jobs. So enjoy. I think we need to look at the age of consent in Ireland, says another texter. 17 is so, this is on foot of the story that Jonathan was talking about. 17 is so unrealistic when it comes to young people having sex nowadays. Now, obviously, that would make a lot of people somewhat nervous to lower it even further, because I suppose it would seem to be consent, or, you know, consent in the sense of giving permission to younger, even younger people to have sex. So that's probably going to be one of those ongoing discussions, I'm afraid. And at the start of the show, we did play the clip of the dad who was getting his kid to run to school every day when he found out that he'd been bullying other kids on the school bus. Your discussion and punishments got me thinking about what my mother used to do when we were bold. She was a big believer in waiting until we were far from home in the car and would play a tape that she'd specially made for the occasion. It was basically her and her friends, most likely drunk, who recorded themselves singing our favourite songs of the time in an out-of-tune operatic style. It was pure torture, but extremely effective. That is one of the more bizarre punishments I've ever heard of. Someone else says, I once snuck out and stayed out all night. My father's punishment after I was caught trying to sneak back in was to stay out in the front garden all night with nothing but a sleeping bag. It was a balmy night, so not altogether too cruel. The neighbours thought it was great gas, though, and they talked about it for months. Yeah, that sounds like quite a pleasant sort of punishment that you'd kind of enjoy. And on the subject of tattoos, I've seen that guy too with Sligo tattooed on his forehead. He is bald and it is more on his head. Okay. When I was working in Limerick, I knew of a shoplifter who had his name tattooed across his forehead. Useful for identification purposes, I would have thought. Yeah. Paul says, my mother-in-law says she wants to get a tattoo of the name of me and my wife's newborn, Anthony. I'm really not keen on it at all, to be honest, as I feel it will become an imposition on the little fella when he gets older, when Gran is going round with his poor name scribbled on her thigh. It's a sensitive situation and has led to arguments between myself and the wife, says Paul. Yeah, what part of her body does she want to get it on? And what happens if Anthony decides he wants to be Tony? Or to change his name altogether. White Van Dave says, a guy I worked with years back was big into Bob Marley and kept going on about getting him tattooed on his arm. He came in one Monday morning with a huge tattoo on his upper arm showing until someone said, I thought you liked Bob Marley, that's Eddie Grant. How we laughed, was White Van Dave. And messages in a bottle. Someone says, I put my wedding ring and a nasty note to my ex in a bottle after my divorce. That's an interesting idea. Anyway, time for Tell Me Why with Graham Finley. If you have a question for Graham, you can send it in to afternoon@newstalk.com. Today's question, why does Christianity not have dietary restrictions? Good afternoon, Graham.
Good afternoon.
And I suppose what that means is that there are obvious dietary restrictions in Judaism and Islam.
Yep.
And why isn't this carried over into Christianity?
It's a really great question. It was also sort of originally motivated by people's wanting to know what Jesus ate at the Last Supper, whether he ate pancakes. Just to cut a long story short, because that's the one question everyone wants answered, he may well have eaten pancakes.
Indeed. Well, were pancakes common at the time?
They were. So one of the interesting things is there's some terrific archaeology about cooking in ancient Israel, and we can presume that things were more or less similar in Jesus' time. And so they fried a lot because they had olive oil. They had wheat flour. So wheat was the main source of bread. It was one of the things which they found in the land of milk and honey, the promised land.
Mm.
They actually made the bread in ovens a lot like the place where I got a kebab earlier today, where they stick the bread on the side of the oven until it puffs up and stuff like that. But they fried a lot of vegetables. They fried vegetables into little cakes, and then they would have mostly made bread in the oven, but they also did fry bread into cakes. And they would have had milk, so they could have even made sort of something resembling the modern pancake.
Okay.
So
all
there
right.
you go. So there's nothing to stop Jesus from having pancakes.
Right. Okay, so but theoretically they could have had pancakes.
No, they seem to know that in fact they did fry bread as well and cakes as well as baking bread. So it was available. Now, we don't have a lot of, just to get back on, finish off the Jesus, what did Jesus eat
pancakes,
question,
yeah.
right?
You
know, we don't have a lot of references to what Jesus ate. There's one passage where he has fish and honeycomb.
Mm.
Not now, either that's some kind of avant-garde kind of cuisine thing.
Wow.
Or perhaps separately, like on different dishes. But that's still kosher, though. He also presumably had bread and wine at the Last Supper, although that was technically him. So
okay, yeah, fair enough.
It's a bit confusing, really.
Yeah.
But from what little we know, there's no evidence that Jesus in any way transgressed the traditional dietary laws of the Jewish people.
Right. Okay. I suppose it might be useful then. What if Jesus was an observant Jew in that respect? What did he not eat?
Yeah. Well, so this is fascinating. Like ancient Judaism's religious prescriptions are really tremendously extensive, and they're mostly in Deuteronomy, where all the details are. I mean, I can just read a tiny number of the prescriptions. So basically, cloven hooves and ruminants, those are okay. Cattle, sheep, goats,
mm-hmm.
not camels, because they have the wrong kind of hooves, even though they are ruminants. Halal allows camels, right? Which, because of course, camels had been important to the Arab people at the time. Fish, but they have to have scales and fins. So that excludes catfish, all shellfish, all invertebrates, except for certain types of locusts. So there's most locusts, most insects, not kosher. But there is one kind of locust mentioned in the Bible, which is kosher. However, people have forgotten which one it is. Except for the Jews.
Seriously?
Except for the Jews of... Yeah, so people don't eat locusts just to make sure, right? Except for the Jews of Yemen, who you would think have bigger things going on right now, who believe they still know which locust it is. So,
right.
So they might eat the odd locust. It goes on and on. All flying animals, it all actually makes a certain amount of sense. So all birds which might eat carrion, all predatory birds, out.
Right?
Bats, out. Bats are birds for the purposes of the Bible. Rabbits, although they chew the cud, according to that they also have the wrong kind of hooves, rabbits are out. All rodents, right? So I once knew a rabbi and a philosopher who was talking about the recent dispute in Israel as to whether giraffes were kosher. But since they're ruminants and they also have the right kind of hooves, they are kosher. They're just very, very difficult to slaughter in a kosher way. Because you have to cut right across the neck severing all the major, you know, blood vessel, blood arteries and stuff like that, and the esophagus, like with one cut. And first of all, it's really high off the ground, and it's really quite thick, hasn't it?
Yeah.
So giraffes have not been eaten a lot, but vets in Israel in 2008 found that the milk of giraffes clotted in an appropriately kosher way. And so the meat and the milk is kosher should you ever find yourself stuck with only giraffes to eat.
Yeah, because I suppose what's fascinating about that is that these kosher rules were drawn up for the animals that they knew about.
Indeed.
There would be all sorts of animals they'd never seen before.
That's it. And they go, I mean, so guinea pigs, one of the problems he had, my rabbi friend, was that he was in South America where they eat guinea pig. And he had to basically be vegetarian for much of the time because guinea pigs are rodents and therefore not kosher.
Mm.
You know, this is actually true to the ancient Israelite way of life. They know that they ate mostly vegetables. And in fact, there's a whole biblical tradition of Christian vegetarianism. So they ate a lot of vegetables because meat was very, very expensive and so forth. Right.
Mm.
Now, of course, the most obvious one is pigs. Why not pigs?
Yeah.
And some people have thought that this was just plain irrational, like Marvin Harris, the cultural anthropologist, because pigs turn food into meat more effectively than any of the animals which Jews were allowed to eat.
Mm.
Right. You know, cows, very, very inefficient. Chickens, much less efficient than pigs. And he's got lots of theories about it. And in fact, this is something which has perplexed Jewish scholars for ages. You know, Moses Maimonides, the great Jewish philosopher, was trying to figure out what kind of rule this was for Jewish people. There are rules which are, according to reason, they make sense, right? There are rules which are simply to sort of ensure obedience, right, to show that you're obedient. And then there are rules which just, you know, are a mystery.
Mm.
He wanted to make it one of those rules which made sense. So he talked on and on about how filthy pigs were. Right, but pigs are only filthy if they don't have a lot of other stuff to eat. So that's when they start eating excrement and each other and things like that. That's why if you want to get rid of a body, famously pigs are your answer. But but pigs were grown in the Middle East. We know that because Jesus cast demons, 2,000 demons, into a bunch of swine, which then promptly ran to the lake and were drowned in the case of the Gadarene swine. So, and we know that pigs were cultivated. However, the plant life and the lack of water in the Middle East has meant that pigs were just not the animal for the climate. And so they would have been a big investment for relatively little return. They would have required a lot of water because they don't sweat very well. And they would have wanted to wallow, which also requires more water. So that's for the so the reason Marvin Harris...
And what would be the... If you're a Jew and you're not allowed to consume pig meat, then why would you have pigs at all?
Well, this would be the reason to that they are not allowed, which is that they're the other. They're other people's food.
Okay.
And a lot of the other things surrounding the Jewish rules are about preventing you from marrying with other people. And so a lot of the idea about having food prepared by Jews or according to certain rules, not mixing milk and flesh, are to encourage Jews to marry within the group of Jews and not to lose their women and men to other tribes. Right.
Right.
And the same thing is presumably true of Islam, although there is a tremendously fertile sort of and fraught interconnection between the Prophet and the Jews of Mecca and Medina. So there was a lot of room for cross-pollination there. But anyway, so that's Harris's view was that it's got something to do with the fact that pigs are not a great investment in that particular area. And in fact, the Egyptians, the Babylonians, the Phoenicians all take against the pig and so forth. And I mean, there are lots of other theories, and this is actually going to get us to Christianity. So pigs are an abomination, right? And because all of this is ultimately about purity. I mean, most religions are about purity. It turns out the Thais have the same relationship to the otter that the Jews have to the pig. So who knew, right?
Mm.
Whereas I think pangolins you can sacrifice. So you've got animals we sacrifice, which are animals which are perfect, without blemish, including like the blood of lambs, which was used to indicate Jewish houses during Passover, the first Passover in Egypt. Passover is at the end of the month, on March 31st. And so there are animals you eat, which are not quite good enough for the altar. And then there are animals you don't eat, which are the dirty, unclean, the most impure. And again, pigs who are eating their own excrement and wallowing in mud, you know, might be identified as that particular thing. The transition to Christianity. Now, this is something...
Actually, just before you... The restrictions in halal, in Islam, are they very, very similar, given that these two religions are just up the road from each other?
They're very, very similar. Now, I mean, the method of slaughtering is exactly the same, basically. And both of them place a huge emphasis on sort of food quality control. So after the ritual slaughtering, both Islam and Judaism spend a lot of time looking at the animal to make sure it's not diseased, or to make sure that it's been particularly well slaughtered, or that it's a healthy animal to eat. And again, this would actually be kind of adaptive until quite recently, right? And again, many of the things are about avoiding carrion. So in Islam, under halal, you can't eat carrion food, and you can't eat animals which you think have eaten carrion. There's something. Again, it gets back to the importance of purity and washing. I mean, both Judaism and Islam have placed a tremendous importance on being clean yourself, right? And this is actually connected to the sort of more humdrum way in which Jesus declares that all foods are clean. At least that's what it's argued. But, I mean, I think the more important thing is that Jesus, as the Lamb of God, and this is something which appears in the words of John the Baptist, plays the role of sort of the ultimate animal of sacrifice, right? He is the most pure. He is perfectly pure. He is like a lamb without blemish, which is not the lamb you eat. It's the lamb you sacrifice on the altar. Mm. And so his blood, you know, he is the ultimate overcoming of all this whole concern with purity. And that brings us to the more humdrum version of this, which is that Jesus was with his disciples, and they're always eating, like he's making loaves and fishes and all that kind of stuff. And the Pharisees, who are always trying to catch Jesus out, say, how do you let your followers eat with their dirty hands, the hands which are defiled, unlike the traditions of our ancestors who always clean their hands and themselves before eating? You know, again, this sort of ritual purity of Judaism. And Jesus calls them hypocrites and lambastes them for caring more about the laws of man than the laws of God. And this is one of the places where he's sort of suggesting he himself is God, right? Mm-hmm. And so he can give to his followers the right to eat with dirty hands. But then he says, what goes into you does not defile you. It goes into the body and it leaves out through the body. It is what comes out of you which defiles you. And that is sexual immorality and slander and greed and theft and all the actual sins people are capable of. They come from within. And so the standard Christian interpretation, and people are very head up about this on the internet. Basically, people are really upset that you might suggest they can't have bacon. it's like you wouldn't believe how much argument and justification of this there is. And so this is the idea that at that point, Jesus declares that all foods are clean. Mm. Now, he doesn't do anything explicitly of the sort. And so we have to wait for a vision which St. Peter had, which was of God coming down from heaven with a giant sheet with all the animals in the world, reptiles, everything, all the stuff which is forbidden. And he says, take, kill and eat. Here, Peter, kill and eat. And he says, no, God, I've never eaten an impure thing. And he said, you know, do not question the things that the Lord has made clean. And so that is a little more of an explicit statement.
Okay, so here's a bacon sandwich, says God,
Here's a bacon sandwich. I'm God, you can eat the bacon. And he says this to Peter, who was in some doubts, apparently. Mm. And then St. Paul is the sort of the most flexitarian on this. He says, and St. Paul was a Jew and a Roman citizen. And so he says to people, you know, do not trouble people in their faith. Do not cause your brother to stumble. Do not compromise the evangelical project by criticizing the way people eat. And so he says, if a brother only eats vegetables because his faith is weak, you know, do not chastise him for that. And that's really handy if you're trying to convert the Romans, because they're eating a lot of pig.
Right? Yeah.
They've eaten loads and loads of pigs. So, you know, there's lots of reasons why religions tend towards these dietary traditions or laws. One is this obsession with purity. The other is it's a great, if you're an evangelizing religion like Islam, you know, it's a great way of people to demonstrate their faith, right? Mm. Now, some of the Christian commentators now use this in a much more weaponized sort of way. They say, you know, the reason why, you know, Islam and Judaism has not accepted that God has made all things clean, all foods clean, is because they deny the power of Jesus Christ. They deny his salvation of us, right? And that's why they're going to burn in hell. Similarly, when the Inquisition was, you know, was enjoying a reconquered Spain and Portugal, or the two Inquisitions, to be fair, they would go around sort of basically forcing people to eat ham, right, or encouraging the public eating of ham, which continues to this day, as a way of people, of making sure that these people were not, relapsing into either Islam or into Judaism.
Right, okay, so we weaponized our ham use, basically. pigs have, according to the Kilawala Killjoy on Twitter, pigs have a very aggressive parasitic tapeworm that invades the muscles. It will kill you. So undercooked pork was dangerous. We worm pigs now.
That's it. No, I mean, trichinosis, when people came across sort of the actual diseases borne by shellfish and pigs, you know, in the 19th century, there's a whole movement of people who believe that the Bible is actually the best science and that Bible predicts all future science. So all future scientific discoveries are in the Bible somewhere. Mm. So when they came across trichinosis, which is much less common than it once was, they said, aha, right? But of course, some, you know, Marvin Harris points out, it's like you could just have had the rule being, thou shalt always cook thy pork until it is white.
Yeah. And it would have had pretty much the same effect. Fascinating stuff. Graham, thanks a minute for coming into us. Graham Findlay there. We're going to take a break. After that, the Penguins on Danger Island.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. Gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.